This is the Icon Podcast. I'm Michael Burns, as hopefully you know that by now. And we are a community that is trying to become trained readers reflecting Jesus. I wanted to start this episode with a little bit of an introduction because it is our second month of our ongoing series within our normal podcast that we're calling The Other Realm with Thavani Mashava from Zimbabwe. And one of the interesting aspects of recording a podcast with somebody from Zimbabwe is there's a little mystery thrown into each episode, especially early with how it's going to work out and some of the logistics and things of that nature. And so the episode you're about to listen to was the second one that we recorded, and we recorded them ahead of time because of some of those little situations that might pop up or difficulties. And in fact, with this one, what you'll notice is once we get going, I don't really talk for the entire episode. It's pretty much Thavani, and there's not much back and forth until really the very end. The reason is partly because I was just, you know, fascinated listening to Thavani share, but also there was a delay and there was some freezing going on enough that I couldn't really catch him in time to comment as we were going. And so I just let him go and it records it on his end. And then we put it together and I wanted you to be able to hear that. But we did get that worked out. So by the next episode, it's going to sound normal. We're able to interact as with any podcast episode. So I just wanted to give you a heads up on that as a listeners. So we're going to go to that chat in a minute. But before that, I have a special guest that I wanted to bring on. His name is Tim Blake, and he is the host of a, or should I say co-host of co-host, not the host, a co-host of a new podcast that I thought was really cool. It's called Unpresentable Parts. It's just come out. And, you know, it's funny because I listen to a lot of podcasts. I like a lot of podcasts. There's a lot of podcasts I don't like. There's probably more podcasts I don't like than ones I do. But when I hear one I like, I really like it. And I subscribe and I look forward to the episodes coming out. And so I knew that, Tim, that you had this podcast coming out. And then when it came out, dude, it went beyond my expectations. I really loved what you guys are doing on Unpresentable Parts. So tell us a little bit about the podcast. Who's on it? Who are your co-hosts? Why another podcast? What are you all doing over there in Connecticut? And why should we listen to this?
I appreciate it. Thanks. Thanks, Michael. I think one, we joke around. We need another podcast. I don't know why the world doesn't have more.
There's not enough
podcasts. Not enough talking about talking. our whole idea, the whole idea of the Unpresentable Parts podcast, and I've shared with you before, it's 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 23 and 24, and speaking about the body, and says, you know, the presentable parts, they don't need any special care, but their unpresentable parts need to be treated with special modesty. And so we just took that premise in talking about issues that we have to talk about within the body, like delicate issues, things that you can't just come up here on a pulpit and preach on a Sunday. Well, you can, but most of the time we do it, and I've done it, we mess it up because they're nuanced conversations. They need context, and they need some cultural context as well to a lot of our discussions. And so we wanted to be able to have an opportunity and a time to talk about some more difficult things. And our whole tagline is making the unpresentable presentable. And so my co-host, Titus Walelo, is an incredible brother minister. He's in Florida, and he's getting his master's in divinity. He and I were together here in Hartford, Connecticut for a long while. His wife, you know, anyway, we all have relationships, and I hope marry he and his wife. And then there's my wife, which I should have probably mentioned first. my wife, Samantha, and
who's the real star of the show?
The real star, I hope, I pray that it's God in some way. But Sam is definitely the wisest teacher. She's an amazing teacher. And then Jasmine Cherry. Jasmine Cherry is a sister who is, she's in Providence, Rhode Island. And so the podcast is broken up into two. Our first podcast we did all together, it was the Men and Women, just the Unpresentable Parts podcast. But then we have an Unpresentable Parts podcast Eve edition. And so it's the women addressing issues from their point of view. Now, there are a bunch of women and men doing podcasts all over the place. The thing that may be a little bit different is all of us are basically from minority culture. We're all Black. Now, what we talk about is all Black ain't Black, because Titus is from a Democratic Republic of Congo. My wife is from St. Lucia. She's West Indian. Jasmine is from Long Beach, California. I'm from San Diego, California. And even we're African-American, but our Black experiences are vastly different.
And Jasmine's husband is Haitian or something like that?
Yes, her husband is Haitian, Greg Sherry. And so we talk a little bit about that, about the, you know, I joke around saying we're in interracial relationships, but they're really intercultural, and there are dynamics there that we talk about, but all under the umbrella of Christ and how we deal with that stuff within the church.
That's great, man. I wanted to take a few minutes to talk with you about it because I really hope that our audience will go over and check out what you guys are doing. And I think they'll like it and stay. I think it's really, really good. And like I said, I appreciated it. And I, you know, as I listened to the first episode, it didn't feel like I was listening to a podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously at the beginning you kind of, you know, did an intro and all that, but it kind of took on a feel of like four followers of Jesus sitting in a basement, having respectful but honest conversations about their perspective and their experiences in following Jesus in a, I'll say, a multicultural, multi-ethnic church, which brings different challenges than if you just went to a church where everybody was like you.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciated that. And I think a lot of people will be like, wow, this is cool. This is like getting to listen to a conversation that maybe I wouldn't normally get to hear. But it's also one that's not going to go off the rails. You know, you guys are are measured, honest, but measured. And it almost reminds me of, we have this Patreon episode or series we do called The Misfits. And we've kind of joked, it's with Brian Craig and Reggie Hearn. And Brian's joked, he's like, this is like a D time, a healthy D time that people get to listen in on. And, you know, it really kind of feels that way for us. Like, we don't go in like we're trying to necessarily teach some things and have this outline of, you know, what we're going to do. We have a topic and then we just sit and talk about it and we react to it. And that's kind of the vibe I got with you guys so far. So let me ask you this. Now, you started obviously talking about culture and church and perspective and some of those things. Mm-hmm. Is that going to be the nuts and bolts of the whole podcast, or are you going to touch on a number of subjects, or what is the podcast going to be about long-term?
Well, long-term, we've got a ton. Our goal, similar, I think, to when you started, is just to have conversations, and we're going to see, we're hoping we'll get through the year. So we have a whole year's worth of topics. And so we're going to do several things. If you go to www.unpresentablepartspod.com, there's a tab that says soon come. And if you're wondering why soon come, that's a Jamaican thing. They say soon come. And so you'll be able to see our tab. So we got several different things. We're going to talk about race will be something we talk about. And again, none of us are experts. I think the books that you've written are incredible. We're going to talk a little bit about it, again, from our point of view and how we experience it in the church. how some of the carryover happens. So we are going to have some real,
which is an expertise all in its own.
It's more experiential, right?
Yeah.
And so we'll do that. We're also going to talk about, we have a whole series within this first season entitled Views from the Valley. And it's based upon Psalm 23 and how Christianity, basically, it ain't always sweet. And so there's things that we deal with. A lot of our Christianity, we do spend in the valley, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And some of the topics we'll talk about, one of our ministers from Cleveland is coming on, Ryan Painter. He had to stop preaching because he was having so much anxiety, he couldn't preach anymore. We're going to talk about depression. And how depression impacts us. Delano Stewart from Las Vegas, another evangelist, going to come on and share a little bit about how he dealt with depression. And so we've got Views from the Valley section that we're going to talk about. Another one we're going to do is Hermeneutics for Dummies, just talking about, you know, basically how do we read our Bible? I felt like my first, I became a Christian in 1989. I did not really learn in depth how to read my Bible. And I consider myself a great student of the Bible. I did not learn how to read my Bible until about 2014. And there's several books. And so basically we want to have several different guest speakers coming on. And maybe Michael Burns will be one, but that will help us.
He's hard to get.
Hey, listen, we got a small budget. I think I've got some Red Bull and some gum. Any case, but that'll be one thing we are going to talk about sex, and some of the issues there. We're going to talk about we don't necessarily get into purity culture, but literally learning how to have actual conversations about sex within the church. We are going to talk about politics. We are in now we're in a perpetual political season, yeah. And so we don't really talk about it in church. And I know you wrote an amazing book. I believe, was that 2020? Was that? Yeah. No, that was 2020 or 2019. 2020
that came out, yeah.
Okay. And so we want to talk a little bit about it because I know as disciples, we love the blanket, like, oh, everything is Jesus, but it's just not true. Every church is influenced by its culture. That's what the Bible, all the different books are written to address different cultural issues. And so we here in America, we've got our own issues that we've got to deal with. And so we want to talk about that again, not from a standpoint of experts, but we do want to have some conversation about how that does impact us as Christians. And in particular, because race is such a big part of now our political conversation, maybe it always has been in the States, but how that does impact Christians of color within the church. So those are some of the things that are coming up. You can see them on the Soon Come tab. Also, the Eve edition, they've got a kind of a different slant, but they've got several different topics they're going to cover. Their first episode will actually be out on Wednesday, March the 6th. And they're going to be talking about identity. And so you'll get to know a little bit more about them and their backgrounds, a really, really deep discussion. And then they'll preview some of their upcoming episodes.
Love it. And will you have weekly episodes? Is that the plan now, once a week or?
They don't know, but that's what we would like to do. So at a minimum, every other week.
Okay.
The hope is that we'll be able to provide one way or another once a week. We'll be able to have a different episode every week.
Got it. Okay. And tell again your website and where people can find you. I know you're on podcast platforms and they can subscribe and like and leave a review and all that good stuff that helps podcasts. But where give us your website and anything else where people can find you.
Okay, again, I don't know why we still say www, but it's at unpresentablepartspod.com. You can also catch us on YouTube. At Unpresentable Parts podcast there on YouTube. We're on Facebook because similar to what you guys do, we're going to not just be a podcast platform, but we're also doing a video. And so you'll be able to see kind of our interactions and the flow there. And so we're on Twitter, though we don't have anything there, Instagram, TikTok. So anywhere we could be in your face, then we'll be there.
I love it. And yeah, you guys have already surpassed us because we put little video clips up on social media, but Jason and I decided a long time ago that we had faces for radio and not for YouTube. And so we stick to the audio. Gianna, our other co-host, she could pull off the YouTube channel, but Jason and I feel like we would drive viewers away. So we stick to straight audio. But you guys are a good enough looking crew that you can pull off the YouTube channel. So I love that you have both. Please check out Unpresentable Parts. Tim, thanks for joining with me, and I look forward to hearing your next episode.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
All right, now we're going to head over to our conversation with Tavani. Welcome back to the Icon Podcast, our special monthly episode with Tavani. Now, I'm Michael Burns, and I'm with Tavani Mashava. Originally, we had planned to do these episodes as kind of a special bonus episode. And then as we started doing them and talking, we decided that this would be a once a month kind of one of our regular episodes dropping on Monday. So we were originally going to call it Tavani Thursday, but now it's just our once a month episode, our time with Tavani. Maybe we can call it that. But Tavani Mashava joining us from Zimbabwe. Good. It's good morning for me. Good afternoon for you, or good evening rather. I hope you're doing well today.
Hey, Mike, I am doing well, bro. It's good to see you. It's good to be here. And hello, everyone, from a very sunny Gweru town in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, now you were telling me that you guys are going through quite a problematic drought and heat wave right now, hey?
Yes, we are in the middle of a drought. The heat is unbearable. All my windows are open, fans are on. You know, you can hardly think. It's so hot. And also the drought, you know, people planted maize and so on, you know, subsistence farmers. Everything is dried up and the water resources are dwindling. People's cattle and, you know, goats and what have you are all dying. So, yeah, it is quite a challenge. And strangely, Mike, it's a time also that arouses a lot of spiritual nuances. You know, people beginning to talk about we need to go and ask for rain.
So here's what I want to do today, Tavani. We are approaching this subject kind of the spiritual realm, the other realm. Mm-hmm. And, or as Michael Heiser's famously called it, the unseen realm, which I like yeah. as well. Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit last time about this. This is a topic that is in many respects front and center in African spirituality and Christianity. Mm-hmm. But not nearly as much in the West. We have very much relativized it, almost approach it as an odd little vestigial aspect of faith from the, you know, dark ages yeah. of, you know, ancient peoples who didn't understand things very well. Mm-hmm. And now we know better, so we don't have to pay attention to that realm. Now, interestingly, that seems to be increasingly changing in the West. You know, mm-hmm. at least anecdotally, at least what I hear, more and more people are starting to mm-hmm. go, you know, maybe there is something to this. Maybe the biblical worldview isn't just superstition, but that there is a reality there that we need to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if let's just have a conversation. I kind of want to let you lead this a little bit and I'll jump in here and there. But what is the biblical worldview on the spiritual realm? That's my first question. Mm-hmm. And my second question that you can kind of weave in there is, how does the African worldview of the other realm, the typical African view, how does it reflect or at times, you know, lay over the biblical worldview, and maybe at other times contradict a little bit of the biblical worldview? But what does this look like from a biblical perspective?
It's very interesting, Mike, and I think I've had my eyes opened up quite a bit in just the studying a lot of material, especially you mentioned Dr. Mike Heiser, the late, and some of the wording that he puts in there that helped me to piece things together, to process some of the things that I had in mind, but I had not really known how to connect the dots. And I think when you look at the way that the biblical authors say it, it's amazing, because when I started seeing some of these scriptures that I've read all the time, I was like, whoa, I was blown away. I mean, just looking at right from how the if you were to ask the ancient Jews to say, what is the problem with the world? What is the problem with, why do we have human depravity? And normally we will think of, well, the fall, you know, Genesis 3 and, you know, Adam and Eve and the serpent character and so on. And yet when you then study out and understand how the ancient Jews viewed that, that they looked at the problem being with these spiritual beings, you know, the sons of God, that you get introduced to, in particular in Genesis 6, you know, when it talks about the sons of God that came down and had relations, sexual relations with the daughters of men, and they have these giant, you know, children, and now how that becomes a problem when you look at it from Genesis 6, you know, where it actually starts off by saying, hey, you know, these sons of God, you know, they came in and they did this with this, with the daughters of men, and they brought these giants. And then it jumps in verse 5 of chapter 6, and then it says, hey, you know, and then God saw the wickedness of man. And you're like, wait a minute, that sounds like a bit of a disjointment right there. You know, but when you then go further, you actually see that when it calls them the men of renown, the men of old, and I'm like, wow, you know, these are like people that were known to the audience, to the readers there, that these were legendary figures that they knew about, that they'd heard about in their history annals and so on, and how these people were the problem, you know, to that. And so, and then when you obviously go to the extra biblical material, like for example, the first book of Enoch, and it gives you the backstory, you know, and Enoch is actually referenced in Jude, in Peter. You find that there's a lot of reference to Enochian, you know, literature in a lot of the New Testament writers. And first, you know, gives you the backstory, you know, of what was there in Jewish tradition, in belief, in terms of what really happened. Who were these sons of God, you know, these rebel angels and so on, and the problem that they caused. And so you find that they were responsible, according to that tradition, they were responsible for corrupting humanity, you know, for teaching them things that God wasn't ready for them yet, you know. And so when you look at that, then you see how, and it says that these giants were there before and after. And when he says before and after, he's talking about before the flood and after the flood, you know, which is very interesting, you know, if you look at again in Genesis 6. And then God destroys everything in the flood. And then after that, you have Noah being saved in the flood with his family. God does a decreation of the earth, plunges everything back to chaos, preserves this remnant, and then he says, well, let's restart this thing again. And sadly, that was not what happened. There's a further, you know, there's this, the human beings rebel again, refused to spread out, and they want to make a name for themselves. And that's the third rebellion now that happens at Babel, you know, and God is not happy. He's had it. He's like, okay, you guys, I'm done. I'm done. You guys are just not getting it. You are not obedient. You are not interested in being my image bearers and doing life on my terms and, you know, spreading out and creating more image bearing. And so this is where it gets juicy now, because in Genesis 11, God scatters their, you know, scatters them, and they spread out, and he confuses their language. But now Deuteronomy 32, which is what I've become very fond of, that passage, and the Deuteronomy 32 worldview that really talks about, that gives you the backstory of what happened in Genesis 11 and on the scattering of the nations or the disinheritance of the nations, you know. So I'll just quickly read Deuteronomy 32, verse 7 to 9. My version, ESV, says, remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask your father, he will show you, your elders, and they will tell you. When the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God. Wow. But the Lord's portion is his people, Jacob, his allotted heritage. Now, this is interesting because it gives you the backstory of Genesis 11. This explains what actually happened and on that time where God, you know, he scattered the nations. But in actual fact, what he did is he divided them amongst his sons. I know Michael Heiser calls them the divine council. These are the sons of God that rule with God. They're God's other realm family. And so it's interesting here that God divides these nations. He disinherits them and he divides them to be ruled by these lesser gods with the small g, you know, his sons. And it's interesting because when he does that, he says, okay, I will have my own people, Israel, one day. And it's interesting to note that most of the time, some of the versions that we have will not say number of the sons of God, but will say the sons of Israel, most versions, which is not really the greatest translation, because if you check out, yeah, it's actually, it doesn't make sense, because when this disinheritance happened, Israel did not exist, you know, as a nation. They didn't exist, and they found that the original text in the Dead Sea Scrolls, which is older than what was used to translate our English versions, actually translates the sons of God or the angels in the Greek versions, you know. So it's actually the correct thing is he divided it amongst the sons of God, these lesser gods or lesser Elohim in the Hebrew, you know. So you see that nuance there of these other gods that get to rule, you know, over these territories that God has divided the nations among. So this is what you would call, that scholars now call the Deuteronomy 32 worldview, you know. And so the interesting thing now is, for me, when I saw this and began to understand also the story of the disinheritance of the nations in Genesis 11, and then, Mike, when you jump to Genesis 12, where we are introduced to Abraham, you know, and how God calls Abraham and, you know, he says, hey, leave your father's, you know, land and, you know, we're going to take this journey together. I'm going to make you into a great nation, you know, through you, your descendants, the nations or all nations, all tribes on earth will be saved. And he gives them this promise. But it's curious to see where Abraham came from, you know. Joshua 24 verse 2 actually gives us, again, I love these backstories, you know, in terms of what and where did Abraham come from? What was the environment? What was his context, you know? And in Joshua 24 verse 2, and Joshua said to all the people, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, Long ago, your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates. Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, and they served other gods. Now, this is interesting because Abraham, we've just finished chapter 11 of Genesis. God, Deuteronomy 32 tells us God gave the nations over to his sons, the divine council, to rule over, you know, the humans. And so one would assume that they are doing so on God's terms. They are doing it for God, and they would help humanity to worship Yahweh, the true God. But that doesn't seem to be the case. You know, and I think another thing I'll mention, Mike, is that it's very difficult for us to conceptualize that God has this other spirit family in the spirit realm that also have the free will that we have. You know, just as much as humans, God created us to be his image bearers, and he gave us free will, you know, that we can make decisions. We can decide if we want to be good or bad. We can decide how we want to run our lives. We can decide how we want to interact with each other. We can make bombs. We can create life. We can bring healing. We can bring death. We can do all kinds of things. And God doesn't control, you know, he doesn't want robots. He has given us that free will. So, it's hard for us to actually conceptualize that even these sons of God, the divine council, they have that kind of free will to make decisions in the discharging of their ministry, you know. And and so this is the thing. They rule over the nations, but they have free will. And so here you can see there's a big problem between chapter 11 of Genesis and chapter 12. Something has gone fundamentally wrong. Something has gone fundamentally wrong there. And you find that these people in where Abraham came from, they are worshiping other gods. So it means that these lesser gods or the sons of God that are meant to be ruling over men on God's behalf and leading, you know, helping humans to really just serve and worship Yahweh, they're not doing that, because we see Joshua 24:2 tells us that Abraham is called from a people that is worshiping. So basically they were worshiping other gods, you know, and so that's where God calls him from, to begin to say, okay, I'm going to begin to form my own people, which Deuteronomy 32 had told us about. And so this is very important to note, that there is these lesser gods that are ruling, you know, that are running things on behalf of Yahweh. And again, Psalm 82 opened my eyes big time to this concept again, because again, you can see now Yahweh is not happy with these spirit beings. He's not happy with these sons of God. And Psalm 82 is so amazing because it says, God has taken his place in the divine council. In the midst of the gods, he holds judgment. How long will you judge unjustly and show partiality to the wicked? Give justice to the weak and the fatherless. Maintain the right of the afflicted and the destitute. Rescue the weak and the needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked. They have neither knowledge nor understanding. They walk about in darkness. All the foundations of the earth are shaken. I said, you are gods, sons of the Most High, all of you. That's in verse 6. And in verse 7, nevertheless, like men, you shall die and fall like any prince, or fall as one man or any man, you know. And verse 8 says, arise, O God, judge the earth, you shall inherit the nations. So here we can actually see in this psalm, God is in this divine council. He sits in this council, and this council is with his sons, you know, these divine beings, these gods, and God is in their midst, and he's not happy. You know, they haven't done well. They haven't done things God's way. They haven't led or ruled over men in the way that Yahweh would desire. They haven't produced image-bearing communities of Yahweh. And so Yahweh is not very excited about that. He's not happy with them. But the point I want us to see is how, you know, these other gods, these lesser Elohim, you know, these lesser gods who are ruling over men, but they haven't done a great job, you know. And so when you go through now, throughout the scriptures, I mean, we even see the divine council in the book of Job, you know, and they are there sitting, and they you know, God convenes in their midst, and you can see that nuance again, you know. And then as you proceed, you'll find that the whole deal of even Israel being taken out of Egypt after he had formed them into a nation, it was all about God, Yahweh, making a comeback, you know, to form this nation he had talked about, that was talked about in Deuteronomy 32, of his own people that would be his own possession, and God never abandoning the Eden project of wanting a people that are image bearers, that will do life and look after his good creation on you know, on his terms. But now here we are. You know, so when you see this, the whole point is, this is where the problem of humanity lies. It's in these gods and the corruption and the way that they have not done things well. In the book of Daniel as well, there is reference in Daniel 9, Daniel chapter 10, of the spirit princes of Persia and Greece are referenced, you know, the ones that prevented the angel of God from giving, he wanted to stop him from giving the answers to Daniel. You know, when Daniel fasted for 3 weeks and for 21 days, this angel from God would come with his response from Yahweh, was prevented passage by the spirit prince of Persia, until Michael, the archangel, comes and he, you know, he comes in there, you know, and steps in into that battle, and allows this angel to come to Daniel and give him the response. And the angel says, hey, I'm going to go back, you know, the same way I came, and the spirit prince of Persia will be waiting for me. And this time the spirit prince of Greece will join him, you know. And so you can see there's this concerted effort by these, you know, spirit beings, these lesser gods who are ruling over these boundaries or territories of the world, and how they seem to want to subvert Yahweh's rule, you know. And so you have all these references. And even when you now go into the New Testament, it became clearer when it begins to be most of the references of the rulers and authorities. You know, he references the rulers and authorities. You know, it's the famous one, Ephesians 6, where Paul says, hey, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the principalities in the realm, in the spirit realm or in the heavenly realms. You know, so what you see is that the biblical authors, they have a very consistent view. Even if you look at the day of Pentecost itself and the many nations being there, you know, you can see the reference to Genesis 11 there of the nations being brought back. The Great Commission, Jesus says, go out into all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go out, you know, and make disciples of all nations. Again, it's that nuance of saying, hey, go and gather back the nations to me. You know, those scattered nations, those disinherited nations, you know. And so the biblical authors, they paint this picture of showing that the problem that we have is really largely a lot of intertwining with these divine beings that are not, you know, going in Yahweh's will, but are doing their own thing of subverting the rule of Yahweh and not promoting humanity to be the image bearers they need to be. There's a lot of corruption there. There's a lot of, you know, seduction there of wanting men to not, you know, live the life and the potential that they have to be Yahweh's image bearers. So, so now when you look at that, you know, it explains a lot of things, because I know I used to wonder a lot of times to say, hey, how did we figure out how to you know, dig for minerals in the ground? How did we figure out some of these things? How did we figure out that, you know, you can find uranium like way underground, you know, all these things? And until I bumped into it in First Enoch, that talks about how these guys taught men all these things, how to look for minerals underground and all that. And some pieces began to fall together. Now, when you look at it that way, I know there's much more that could be said, but I think for time purposes, just to give that rough, you know, sort of summary of what's going on there. And then when you bring it down to the African culture, you find that there's a lot of similarities in terms of these belief systems. You find that uniformly, what I've learned and experienced is that there are some parts of Africa where they do have alternate gods that form part of this, you know, divine council that goes to the creator God. And then you have these territorial gods, smaller gods that do his bidding on a geographical level. You know, you get a clan, you know, for example, in a clan, if I have myself as Tabani, it means that my great grandfather, when he died, he becomes our sort of like a guardian little, you know, deity. He's promoted to become, you know, a spirit being, and he is like immediately watching over the clan, you know, and then he reports to, you know, when our chiefs or our headmen die, they are higher than him and so on. And then they report to those guys. And then you also have these deities that, you know, are in charge of different things. But by and large, in our region here, we do have the creator God. And then you have your ancestors that graduate to become spirit beings. And so when you have problems, you know, you approach them, and they take it to the higher next in hierarchy, and then they take it to the creator God and so on. So I know earlier on I mentioned even about how when we're having a drought like this, you know, we start having these ceremonies to ask for rain. In our country, there is designated places that are actually officially, you know, traditionally recognized as sacred mountains, caves, that even politicians will go there, the chiefs, they'll go there, especially times like this of crisis, national crisis, you know, is the drought I was talking about, and they will go there and have rituals. People, you know, you have all these elders and traditionalists, they go there and spend the night and do all kinds of dances, rain dances, and so on. And then there's like a ceremony where you have the leadership and politicians, they even go there and they speak. You know, they speak, they will basically kneel and, you know, kind of, you know, cup their hands together as a way of, you know, respect. And there's a brewing of traditional beer and so on. And they speak to the spirits. They speak to the spirits and say, hey, please, is there anything we need to do? Is there anything that we should be aware of? Is there been wickedness? Is there been, you know, and so they're trying to appease the spirits, and then in hoping that the territorial god or spirit will be able to pass on to the creator god. And say, hey, your children are sorry, and they've, you know, I'm happy with them. They've sacrificed, so let's give them some rains and so on. You know, and I know that so it varies. We have different tribes, and so each one looks a little bit different. For example, you know about the Zambezi, Mike, the Zambezi River. I think that's one of the longest, or the, you know, rivers. Second to the Nile. So the Zambezi River is the one that feeds into the Victoria Falls. So that river, we've got the Kariba Dam. I think it's one of the largest man-made dams. I think we're number 5 in the world or something like that. So there they had a deity before the dam was built, and his name was Nyami Nyami. Okay. Now, the Tonga people that lived in that area, they lived along the Zambezi River banks. And so they depended on Nyami Nyami as the guardian of the river, just like you had the god of the Nile. So they had that god who would make sure that they have water, they have fish, they have everything that they really needed to survive. And so the interesting thing is in the 50s, when the dam, Kariba Dam War was put up, the locals, they had to be displaced, you know, removed from that place and relocated elsewhere. And that disturbed their worship and belief systems. And they believe that Nyami Nyami had traveled to go and see his wife somewhere, or rather he had traveled and left his wife. And so when they put up the dam, the dam wall, when he came back, he found the dam wall and his wife was locked up on the other side of the river. So there is this strong belief that it interfered with the locals' culture, their worship, and so on, and that he's not happy. So from time to time, you have tremors and all that that happens in that area because obviously of the dam, scientifically, but the belief system in the locals is that Nyami Nyami is not happy, and one day the dam will collapse. During its construction, it actually collapsed twice, you know, and many men died and engineers and so on. And so at one time, the guys that were washed away by the flooding water, they could not find their bodies for a couple of days, you know. And then so what they did, they consulted the local spirit mediums and so on, and they told them, okay, Nyami Nyami is not happy. You have to sacrifice a bull. So they put that bull in the water, and it floated in the water. And then in the morning, guess what? The bodies of all the guys that were missing were found at that spot. And so even up to now, they can't really explain how that happened. You know, it's just a weird, you know, dynamic. But then you see, you have all these belief systems. Even when we talk about, so in Zimbabwe, we have a major spirit person or medium called Mbuya Nehanda. So Mbuya Nehanda, Mbuya means grandmother, or an old lady, you know. Nehanda is her name. So she was a woman that lived in the 1800s. She was possessed by the spirit of this Nehanda woman. And so she was like the emblem or the, you know, for lack of a better term, your mascot, you know, your mascot in your baseball or, or your American football. So she was the mascot of the liberation, our liberation struggle, you know, our war for independence. So she was the one that would be quoted, would be prayed to, would be consulted and so on. Yeah. So, and the funny thing is the woman that was then killed by the white colonialists at that time, she was hung. She was just a spirit medium of this person, but they hung her because they believed that she was giving strength to the nation. She was giving hope to the nation because she would tell them all these oracles and what would happen and so on. And so a lot of our war was fought, funny enough, you know, yes, there was a war being fought from our soldiers from, they were in Mozambique, Zambia, and fighting the Rhodesian forces. But the thing that for the Africans, the war was very spiritual, you know, because there was a lot of this ceremonies and this spirit medium and so on, and a lot of this sacrificing and so on. So now, fast forward, we come to now, it hasn't really changed. You find that our leaders and so on, it's something that they believe in so much, and how that they don't want to upset that balance because they believe the country was given to them through that, through the spirits. And so why I mention this is because now there is a tension, because now you have a lot of, you know, Christianity, And a lot of, for example, a lot of people talk about prayer and praying for the country and so on. And so even the one time the president had a presidential advisory committee that it was comprising of, you know, businessmen and all these kind of guys. And some of them quit because they are Christians and they were like, no, this is not working. We are not down for this spirit medium type of stuff, because they would say every the meetings they would have, the leadership will then take them to the spirit medium to get the final approval. And if this medium says, nope, the ancestors are not happy about this, then that's it. It doesn't matter how smart you're. So that's one of the tensions that you have, where you have the older generation believing that, hey, you know what, they look at rationalism, you look at logic, you look at all these things, and then you have the elderly generation that says, we don't want to mess up with this, you know. And then you look at the Christians also saying, hey, let's pray through this and so on. So there's a lot of upheaval around these areas where people then say, that's why we are in the mess we are in, because there's people are trying to be Christians and then some are still believing in these other gods. And maybe that's why we're having the problems we're having in Africa. You know, that's why. And so it starts at, it's at that macro level, at national level. And then it also then transcends down to family level. You see, where there is that belief. Yeah. So I would say, that's what I would say for now, Mike.
Wow. Yeah, that's, man, I appreciate that. It's so fascinating. I didn't even feel the need to talk the whole time. I was just mesmerized listening to your perspective. And I love that macro sort of view biblically. I think in future episodes, we're going to kind of break down and get a little more into the nitty gritty and then some of the things that we may experience. And at points here, we're going to talk about witchcraft and ghosts and demons and how that all plays into that, what you've experienced, what people here might experience. So, you know, we're going to try to do it through a biblical lens and not a fantastical lens. And, you know, at times, debunk some things or demysticize them, but at other times there is a spiritual mystery there. So I appreciate all of this, Tabani. Man, you're so knowledgeable and passionate that my voice didn't even become an issue in this episode, because it was ideal. I could just sit back and listen to you talk. So I appreciate it. And please join us next month when we'll continue this conversation on the Icon Podcast. If you have any questions or feedback or wish that we would talk about certain aspects of this topic, please write us at iconpodcast@gmail.com. We read all those and we'll do our best to respond and include that. Thanks so much for joining us. See you next time.
Thank you, everyone.